See what Carmen and Yurko are talking about on Twitch.
Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today.
This is Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
All right, Hoodie and I back 7 a.m. tomorrow. Thank you, Albert Breer. Thank you, Danny, Jeff, and JR. And Crosstalk's brought to you by Hawthorne Racecourse. Fall Thoroughbred Racing is back. There's the newly remodeled rooftop deck for both sports betting and the Points Bet Sportsbook and horse racing with Club Hawthorne. And get in on all the action.
Nice.
Hawthorne Racecourse and the great Jim Miller will give you the best picks in the industry. You'll get them both on the Carmen and Yurko Show and on the Odds Couple.
Yurko and Miller. Pop, 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 pop. What's up, fellas?
That's a different combination right there.
Well, it is. What's up, fellas?
We're doing good. I don't usually get this close to Cap. I'm usually over in that area or behind the glass.
Yes, you are.
He smells good. I'll give him that.
Well, how about that?
You always got that going for you.
Nice batch of Muscatel thrown on this morning out of the 55-gallon barrel in the garage.
I think today's a little Jean-Paul Gaultier.
Oh, that's very interesting.
He plays for the Buccaneers, right?
JPG.
Yes, JPG. He's got one hand.
But still held a pass rusher. Can get to the quarterback, so.
Got a club.
Well, especially if you're going around Simmons.
Oh my God.
We used to call that the seafood buffet. You go up, whatever you need, a sack, TFL, forced fumble, whatever you want. You line up. They were fighting. If you noticed, they were fighting to line up on top of Simmons. They couldn't wait to get over there.
You know, we try to explain to Cap like the Manning cast has entertaining elements to it, right?
I would guess that could be entertaining.
Well, you got Tom Brady on. You have guests stopping by. But the point is, when you got a ball game like yesterday, Seattle and New Orleans, you know there's not going to be a lot of scoring.
Yeah.
You know, there's no real storylines in there because there's no Russell Wilson.
Teams not at full fledged.
No. They also weren't healthy.
Yes.
So I would say that.
Or equipped.
So I would say you got to have a Manning cast just to get through that thing. I watched. But it was just, you knew it wasn't going to be overly entertaining.
I watched the Bulls. That's what I watched. And knowing the game was the game, because I had plenty of NFL action throughout the weekend. Plenty of football action on Sunday for me.
Because it was awful.
I was satiated. Well, the Packer game was on first.
Yeah.
So I got a chance to watch the full Packer game against the Washington football team.
Yeah.
And I watched Washington move the ball up and down the field and then crap the bed inside the five.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, so, the Packers won. But, boy, I tell you, that defense does not impress me one bit. It's a good victory. It's a 6-1. That's 6-1. They've earned it.
Take it.
It's theirs. They don't have to give it back. But it's one that makes me scratch my head and puts them at the bottom of the 6-1 teams that are in there. What the hell's going on in here?
That's a nice thermos. That's my coffee thermos.
That's a beautiful thermos.
I have a question for you, Yurk.
Any question you like, go ahead.
When we were doing the TV postgame on Sunday, Olin Krutz was very impressed that Justin was the first guy to speak. He never took his pads off. He went right to the podium. He said, I have to be better. He put a lot of it on himself. He said, that's a leader who immediately went to the podium and he took a lot of the culpability. He said, I like seeing that.
Well, good. I'm glad that he noticed that he needs to play a lot better. I wish they could protect him better.
Yep.
It would make his job a whole lot easier if they could provide protection for him.
Yeah.
That's one thing. I mean, they're running the ball. They put 140-some-odd yards up there. They're running the ball. So that should help Justin Fields. But when you're running for your dear life and then when you look downfield and you've got a clock in your own head because you know you've been getting killed, it makes life a little bit tougher for you, too. But nothing that can't be overcome. He needs to be better when he's looking at things, and he needs to be able to decipher everything that's happening and get the ball to the right place. That's all.
Here's what I like about Justin Fields going to the podium first. I like that he can go ahead and spill his guts, and then Matt Nagy has to come to the podium
and has to respond to what
Justin Fields said, and that way we find out when guys are in his headset telling him, hey, there's 12 on the field that result in an interception when there's only 11.
Yeah.
You know, and then Matt Nagy needs to at least attempt to explain himself.
And I think he's going to learn this because ultimately he's the one that's accountable on the field.
Mm-hmm.
You have to ignore what's going on in your brain.
Yes.
Give me the play. Don't say anything else to me. Give me the play.
Yes.
Right.
Maybe a reminder on something that we're looking for on specific play. Depth of the linebacker will tell you where you need to go. Remember, that kind of thing, fine.
And you know
what? Just a little bit of a quip after the play if I need to be reminded of something. But don't tell me what's happening. If I can't see it when I'm counting or I'm going and I'm walking to the line of scrimmage, I can't notify 12. Usually it's a defensive lineman sprinting off the field.
Yes.
That's when you know it. But that's happening right in front of your eyes. So he's the guy responsible. I think he's the guy that needs to say, whoa, that thing. I don't need to hear 12. I don't care who it is. I don't care if it's Lazor. I don't care if it's Nagy. I don't care if it's DeFilippo. I don't care of the 75,000 consultants that they've got up there on the offensive side of the ball.
Henry Burks.
I don't care who it is. I want one voice in the headset, the only voice, and I want you to tell me to play and a reminder if there's any reminder about anything. That's it. I'm Justin Fields. I'm the starting quarterback. This is the way business is going to be conducted.
I wonder, you have to imagine good teams. There's only one voice in talking to the quarterback.
Yes, that's it.
We heard a lot. Remember when Sean McVay burst onto the scene and he, quote, fixed Jared Goff.
Yeah. Right.
Everything was, well, you know what? Sean McVay is in his headset. He's dissecting what he sees on the field, and he's basically spoon-feeding Jared Goff. And you know what? That worked to a degree, and that's probably helpful. But I'll say to Yurko's point there, yes, Justin Fields, that's why him playing, those are the good things. Recognize this things that maybe we don't point out on you know, as the average consumer. We don't know what's going on, why an NFL player needs reps like this. This is to his advantage and to the Bears' advantage that they figure this stuff out in his rookie year so that by year two, you don't need to deal with this foolishness.
Well, maybe he doesn't have multiple voices in his head. I'd like to know who's telling whoever is in his ear. Let's say it's Lazor. Who is the 15th assistant that goes, hey, they got 12 on the field? You better be right.
Well, the problem is you might have had 12 on the field. Then they recognize they're running off.
Yeah.
So if you're in the huddle and then you're trying to hurry to the line, if you don't beat the guy coming off the field, then it doesn't make a difference.
It was 20 seconds when he was told you have
and 15 12. Seconds when it cuts out.
Correct. So in between that is when he snapped the ball.
But the evidence is that you can't see because the All-22 cuts off. You're just seeing play, play, play. You don't know when that guy ran off the field.
So, right. I froze it this morning right here.
Yeah.
At the just before the snap, there's 11 defenders. And there's nobody
on the sideline who's jumping off.
Okay. Right. The quarterback is responsible.
Yes.
No matter what's being said wherever, he's the guy that's responsible. He's the one with the ball in his hand. He's the one that's got the command of the offense when he's on the field.
You're right.
So he's the guy that's ultimately responsible for the bad information that's coming in his ear, which is why on Monday he goes in and say, we got to stop the insanity.
Yes. Okay? Hopefully that's happening.
Stop the insanity. Yeah.
The offense is so bad that he should have just checked it down like Mitch would have. Because it doesn't make sense for these receivers to go 30, 35 yards down when he can't get the ball there.
Part of the problem, though, nobody's going 35 yards sometimes. It's everybody at 5-yard sticks. 5-yard stick, 7-yard stick. And they're just angling off, waiting for the football to get there. If they're open, if he can see them, if he could throw them open. You know, that's what you're looking for. Listen, Allen Robinson on that play, you throw the ball toward the sideline. It doesn't get intercepted. It's either going to be Allen Robinson making a reception or it's out of bounds. Why you decide to throw the ball back into the meat of the field, I have no idea. Allen Robinson also needs to maintain his balance.
He slipped on the play.
Wow. Yeah. Why can't you maintain your balance? You're a professional athlete. I understand if the turf gives way.
Yeah.
You know, you see a big clump of a patch of grass coming up with your foot. Then that makes a lot of sense.
A rainy afternoon, York. Very rainy. Very rainy.
Rainy afternoon.
Remember, it was very rainy, if you remember that, right? It was raining.
Tampa?
Yeah, it was raining. Remember?
Yes.
The surface was very rainy.
A little bit of precipitation.
Yeah, a little bit. It was a little wet.
You said it ultimately is his responsibility, and I remember John Lester, after the game, Hoodie's guy, David Ross, said, yeah, I called one too many cutters. And I said to Lester, so you didn't like the pitch selection? He goes, let me just tell you something. When that ball leaves my fingertips, I'm responsible. If I don't have conviction in that pitch, shame on me for throwing it. It's not on what the call was.
I think that's
fair. So that's very similar to what you're saying about the quarterback.
But I think it's also a rookie quarterback is probably susceptible in his first year, in his first four starts. He's more likely to acquiesce to his head coach. No matter who that head coach is, he's probably likely to defer and say, listen, this is how, he probably thinks, right, Yerk, this is how it gets done in the NFL. But to your point, good quarterbacks probably figure out fairly soon, listen, enough with the nonsense.
Nobody told Marino what to do. Marino, you know, went in with Shula. Shula changed everything, what they were doing. He changed everything. Because he said, I got a guy here that is cocksure of himself, 100%. No gray area whatsoever. This guy knows what the hell's going on, and he's going to have, we're giving him the helm, and he's going to do what he wants. We'll change everything to make things work for this guy.
Ah, cocksure.
Yes.
With those Isotoner gloves.
Ah, yes.
Handed them out every Christmas, guys. I got my pair, 1990, that I threw up on its carpet.
Still have them?
I do not. I believe I put him into play that winter.
The ex-roommate get him?
Nope. Put him into play.
How long did
he's probably gone before the ex-roommate even became a part of the problem.
How long did the pair of Isotoners last you, Yurko? Any idea?
I bet you a year and a half.
That's not too good.
A year and a half. Oh. And then what happens is you misplace them or you lose one.
Oh, okay. We'll miss
once you lose one, then the second one's got to go. You can't have one glove.
It's interesting.
I mean, we're not in Mexico City in 68, kid. It doesn't work that way.
Those were good gloves back
then. Yes, they were.
You could see it through the black and white TV.
It was Juan Carlos
and
Tommy, and then the second guy wore the left glove on the left hand because it was from the same pack of gloves.
That's exactly right.
They weren't selling right-handed gloves only.
No,
they weren't. I think that's a tremendous sidebar to that, and I don't want to approach the bench either. Okay,
that's fine.
Yes, but that is just the quirk of the situation in the times. And goes to show you they probably were thinking about it, but weren't really committed to it, and then at the end just said, to hell with it, this is what we're going to do. We are going to protest.
You know what I'll remember? I'll always remember the 68 Olympics for hoodie.
What's that?
The Fosbury flop.
Dick Fosbury. Yes.
Ah, Fosbury. Yeah.
The high jump would never be the same.
Revolutionized the high jump.
I love
absolutely.
It, man. By the way.
Favorite high jumper of all time?
It has to be Dick Fosbury, no?
No, for me it's Dwight Stones.
Dwight Stones was amazing.
Oh, my God. Really? 76 Olympics, I believe. Montreal is where we saw Dwight Stones.
Dick Fosbury was the guy that started the Fosbury flop.
That's interesting because that's what Meller just said.
Oh, I had something in my ear. I did not get to hear that.
Twitter was in his ear.
Do you remember the day?
Again?
Do you remember the day you and I did Name the Olympian from going way back?
It was nonstop.
I started with Vasily Alexiev.
Vasily Alexiev.
I've used that from time to time. When I've had a little stink
Russian
weightlifter.
I went for Ingemar Johansson.
Who is it? Did.
Who?
No, Ingemar Stenmark.
Correct. And I went with Franz Klammer.
Right. Another wonderful skier.
You had that in college?
I did.
You had a little something to get that out of there, right?
I did.
Free clinic.
Yes.
So wait, what's the
it's
game?
It's called Klammer Cream.
You just
kept loading them until you couldn't name one no more.
So you just name Olympians?
Right, like Teofilo Stevenson, the Cuban boxer.
I feel like that game would go on forever.
Al Order. It could go on forever.
Al Oliver.
It could.
Are you drinking?
Carmen was in on it. Like three in, Carmen was out.
Carmen went out right away.
Like, we weren't picking Mark Spitz. We were trying to name obscure Olympians.
From different countries.
I guess. Correct. But, like, you know, I think you need ground rules because otherwise it's just.
Do you know who
Teofilo? Just keep going.
He does. Do you know who Teofilo Stevenson was?
I don't.
Maybe the greatest boxer in the history of the world, but
he was
Cuban.
Yeah.
And so he never got to come here and fight for the championship.
Did you ever see Teofilo fight?
No, I have not. No.
Howard Cosell on the call?
No.
Oh, yeah.
I did. It was amazing.
You know, it's a good. In the back of the car game. Long trip.
It is.
We've done that.
I irritated the hell out of these guys.
NFL
when I did
players.
Colonel Angus all the way back. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He did.
I think that's good. I think it's a good in the car long road trip game.
Yes. We did NFL names.
Yes.
And so if you had like
Alphabet,
Adam Archuleta.
Yes.
You had to come up with an A because the last name of his last name
correct.
Is an A.
Aaron Donald.
Right. Boom. Then you go to a D.
Yeah.
And then he would give you a D.
Mm-hmm.
Which he's not giving you right now.
That would be Dwight Clark.
Now you got to do a K.
Okay.
Or a C.
Or
C.
Or do we go the last letter? Or
no,
or
it's,
do
the, still, it's
last the
last
name.
Letter.
Yeah.
Last
so,
name.
Okay. Kellen Moore.
And that would give you, well, before I would give you Cam, would, that would have gave you Cam Newton.
I would go to Eugene.
With a K.
Eugene Wilson.
Huh? A K, not a C.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. See?
So what is it now? What's your name?
So it would be with a K. So let's go. You want to go?
Yeah, we already did it.
Cam Chancellor.
Cam Chancellor, and I would give you Cam Newton.
No, you would go with an R.
With an R.
Chancellor? You said Cam Chancellor.
Ends with an R.
Oh, ends with an R. Oh, it's not the first letter. It's the last letter.
Yeah.
Ah.
Correct.
Ah.
So I'll give you Richard Sherman.
I would give you Rex Grossman.
Rex Grossman. Now with an N.
I would give you a Nico Noga.
Or I'd go Nolan Cromwell.
Well, I already went Nico Noga, so we can continue on. Somebody's got to come up with an A.
Okay, Andy Hecht.
I would have gave you Lawrence from Nebraska. Lawrence Phillips.
With an S.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's how you play the game.
I would have given you Sam Ritigliano.
I'd give you Orlando Pace.
I would have gave you like Steve Largent. How about that?
And now we start naming senators, right?
Yes. Yeah. Eddie Murray for the E.
Ah.
Now you got to come up with a Y.
But he was never a senator.
Y.A. Tittle.
No, Eddie Murray was a football player.
Y.A. Tittle. Bam.
I would have given you Y.A. Tittle.
Yancey Thigpen is the go-to usually.
Yancey, yes.
Thigpen, because there's not a ton of Y's out there.
No.
You guys are running trouble with Y. But there are X's, surprisingly enough, when it ends in an X.
Yes.
You'll find some X's. Xavier Rhodes. There are some X's there for you, my friend.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Most of them are going to be named Xavier, probably.
Yeah. You would have to guess. You need to find a lot of there's no Xenons or something like that. That's not going to work for you.
All this and a lot less coming up with.
I'm telling you, you can do these names all day. You get caught in this trap. It's like watching YouTube at night. Next thing you know, it's 3:30 in the morning. You're like, what the hell just happened? It's like when I was watching the coin pushing game. I got caught one night. It was 4:00 in the morning, watching them drop quarters into the coin pushing game, waiting for the big tower of quarters or the big tower of Bitcoin to fall over. I'm like, what am I doing? It's 4:00.
The algorithm got you. The algorithm just takes your sleep away. That's what it does.
Took it all away.
Yerk, have you watched Squid Game?
No.
Kick us out.
No. I'm a conscientious objector to Squid Game. I watched a James Bond movie yesterday. I went to the theater and watched the James Bond movie.
Oh, great
movie. Great movie. That's all I'm going to tell you. I give it 4 stars. I give it 10 thumbs up, whatever, you know, the rating system is.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic movie. That's it. That's all I'm telling people.
The Yurko endorsement.
That's right. That's the Yurko endorsement right there. So I haven't watched it. I'm a conscientious objector to the game.
Kick us out, Yurko.
To the show, whatever that is. Simple Squid Game. What's it called?
The Squid Game.
Squid Games, yes.
No,
conscientious
Squid
objector.
Game.
Will not watch.
I'm like Danny. I put a thought in front of like
The Manning cast, do not watch. Refuse to watch. Undermining my guys, Louis Riddick and the rest of the guys.
We were going to talk about that.
I am not. I'm not for undermining your broadcast, your main broadcast. That's what ESPN does. Should be ashamed of themselves.
Yerk, have a good day. Meller, have a good day. Hoodie, love you. See you in the morning.
Time to go, boys.
All right, we're out of here.
All the love.
Back at 7 a.m.
Feel it.
Take that.
Zoning out on that Zoom meeting? Zoom. Find out what Carmen and Yerko were talking about. Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Well, today you're going to have to settle for what Meller and Yurko are talking about as Carm makes his way back from Tampa Bay via Philadelphia. Some flight troubles. If you were listening yesterday, you heard Carmen realize that his flight had been canceled in the middle of the show. And thus, he tried his best. It sounded like he gave a damn effort. Yurko.
Ultimately, what got him
was
you can't rent a car going one way anymore.
You are spot on.
He was going to head up to Atlanta, rent a car, head up to Atlanta, leave the car, 12-hour drive just to make the show today.
Mm-hmm.
But they will not let you rent a car from one place to the other without delivering it back to the same spot.
Yep, so, right now everything is chaotic. We're still dealing
tumultuous
with a lot of travel issues. Carm was doing his best. He was scouting across SEC country, trying to find an airport to fly out of. But to no avail, so we will have to sojourn on without him. As you said, we'll find a way.
We're going to find a way. I mean, listen, it's not position A, but let me tell you, position B is pretty damn comfortable here, kid.
I
love it when I get a Jeff Meller in here.
Yurko, I'm a fan of all the positions. I'll just tell you that right now.
And the great thing about today is Tuesdays features a Jeff Meller segment.
Oh, it does.
That we have usually at about 11:30. Featuring, you know, right before, you know, the chance to start acquiring players.
Yes.
That are free agents, especially if you've had some injuries over the course of time.
We'll have
That's it. It's a waiver.
Waiver wire segment. That's the Meller waiver wire segment, a staple every Tuesday.
An award-winning segment, too, by the way. This has helped fantasy teams win their fantasy leagues when it looked like all things have been lost.
Yes.
All things have been lost. Your ship was taken on water. You thought it was gone. It was done. And the next thing you know, your advice has saved people's years.
The fortunate thing is that it's a little bit easier this week. We had the worst bye week situation I've ever seen this last week, which contributed to some of the
low scores
and the poor outing, as a consumer of the NFL product.
Yeah.
There really weren't a whole lot of compelling games this past weekend. It concluded last night with a close game. We can discuss whether or not you found the Saints' victory over the Seahawks compelling or not. You know, the one thing that dawned on me, though, watching is it just goes to show the stark difference when you have a head coach who you can trust. And the Saints have that in Sean Payton,
right,
a Super Bowl winner who is trying to find his way right now with Jameis Winston under center, completely redesigning the offense after Drew Brees is now retired. He's hung him up, and they're running more than almost any other team in the NFL. They're featuring Alvin Kamara, as they should. And you saw last night they went into a hostile environment, and Seattle with Geno Smith could not get things done. And the Bears right now with Justin Fields are just doing whatever they can to survive, and right now it's not going well. As you know, juxtaposed against with the Saints last night, Yerk, going into Seattle and getting a win, it just goes to show what competent coaching can do.
Yeah, and Sean Payton certainly is a competent coach, and he realizes what the weaknesses of the team are, you know, how you got to stay in a game,
mm-hmm.
and what you have to do in the fourth quarter to find a way to win games. And that's the NFL. You ask a lot of coaches in the NFL, what do? You try to be in a position to win a game in the fourth quarter. And as long as you didn't eliminate yourself the whole day, which unfortunately the Bears have found a way to do over the course of time, as long as you can be close enough in the lead, just outside the lead, to have a chance to win in the fourth quarter, that's really kind of all that you want to do. To me, I look at the Bears situation with the right tackle.
Yes.
I'm kicking. If Bars can't play it, or if Daniels is a better right tackle, I'd put Daniels out at the right tackle position if he could play it. I'm not saying he can. But Bars would be your guy moving forward here until somebody else gets healthy. Just the way it is. And the number 70, did he get into COVID protocols?
He's the guy that played the week before. Elijah Wilkinson, yes. He was on Sunday morning. We found out that he had entered COVID protocol, so he was not going to be available. And Justin Fields even noted he found out Sunday morning.
You were in tough already going down to Tampa Bay. You were in tough already. Then when you find out Wilkinson's done, you find out Quinn's not going to play, Hicks not going to play. Now you're trying to do it in a different way. Now you're trying to do it in the most impossible way that you could find. Any Bears fan that traveled down there, and there's a big group of Samurais from the South Side that went down there, 24 of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they call their group, the Samurais.
Okay. I assume it's a homage to Mike Singletary?
I believe it could be.
Do you rib them for that?
I do not rib them for that. They named their group what they were going to name their group. They went down there, and all 24 of them were probably disappointed with what they saw on the football field.
Mm-hmm.
Happy to be down there in the weather.
Sure.
Probably enjoying it, getting rained on a little bit, but not getting rained on the way we got rained up here. But you knew once all that happened, you were not going to find a way to win a game. You weren't going to win that game because of everything that happened right before that game. And that's it. That's the way it was. New week, this week, a chance to go ahead and respond against the team San Francisco that's not as good as everybody thought it was going to be. You're going to be at home. This is a Bears chance, a chance to bring it back to 4-4. Take a deep breath and start assessing as you move forward.
It is interesting because the way the schedule lays out for the Bears right now, you point out they get the 49ers at home on Halloween, and then they get the Steelers on Monday night before a bye. Those are two very winnable games.
Yes.
The last couple, you know, the Packers, even though that was at home and they were in that game, they were always going to have a difficult time winning that game. And you just said it. Last Sunday, it seemed like an impossible task. With the COVID issues they were dealing with going into Tampa against Tom Brady, they ran the ball well and still were blown out before we even reached halftime. So, you know, what they have on the schedule now, go ahead, take advantage of it. You can be 5-4 at the bye. I mean, as a former player, if you went into the bye a game above 500, I mean, listen, you
be
always...
a happy camper.
You will take that. And I think most Bears fans, if you're being realistic with what is on this roster, if I said to you, hey, a game over 500 at the bye, I think most... And Justin Fields under center, most Bears fans would probably have signed up for that at the outset of the season.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Everybody looked at the difficulty of the schedule, and it is a difficult schedule. 31-17. I believe that's the opponents that you have played. You've beaten 2 5-2 teams.
Yes.
1-0-7 team. Okay. Three of the teams that you lost to are 18-3 right now. 18-3, all 6-1. Okay, you were in tough against those opponents, Tampa, Green Bay, L.A. Rams. You were in tough against those opponents. Now, you're going to play a couple of games that you might be able to go ahead and find ways to get a victory. You're trying to become better over the course of the length of the season. That way, when you play those 6-1 teams and those playoff teams, that you compete better than you did earlier in the season. That's what the challenge for the Chicago Bears is as it moves forward.
And so because of that, I'll ask you the question and our listeners, 312-332-3776. At 3-4, with two very winnable games on the schedule before the bye, would you like or would you be open to seeing the Bears turn to Andy Dalton? That's the question here. He's Yurko. I'm Mallory in for Carmen. This is Carmen Yurko on ESPN 1000.
It's Carmen and Yurko. Follow us on the gram at Carmen and Yurko and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Should the Bears turn to Andy Dalton at this point? Or have they gone ahead and made the move to Justin Fields, and at this point, you just got to roll with it? That is a question we've been batting around a bit now that they are 3-4 with two games that are much more winnable than the last couple on the schedule. And as you approach the bye week, I don't think Matt Nagy is really entertaining it, but I think it's a fair question, Yurko, especially from what we've seen from Justin Fields over the last few starts.
I'd only take Fields out if he's hurt. I don't pull Fields out right now. He's in the deep end of the pool. He's learning how to swim. He's figuring it out on the fly. This is the way it needs to be done. Experiencing it, seeing it on film, reliving it, and then learning and processing and taking it into the next week is the way this has got to be done at this point. If he ends up getting banged up, he ends up spraining an ankle, you put him on the bench, you bring Dalton in, and you just go about the business with Dalton until Fields is ready to come back and play.
So, first of all, I guess the question would be
that's
two.
That's my theory.
Yeah, no, and
it's a theory only.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes people want to say there's a right and a wrong answer. This is just the way I would do it.
It's funny because I think the vast majority of Bears fans wanted Justin Fields out on the field as soon as possible. And then when we got to see it, I mean, it should have been obvious what we've seen with Matt Nagy over the last 3+ years is that chances are it wasn't going to go smoothly. But now that we're actually watching it unfold, it feels worse in the moment to see him try and figure out the NFL. You know, it's a far cry watching an open wide receiver in the NFL versus what you see in college. Frequently in college, when you're playing for an elite program like Ohio State, you'll see wide receivers streaking down the field wide open. And as long as a quarterback is at all competent and can put it in the right spot, he can watch potential, you know, highly drafted players go and run underneath those balls and pile up some gaudy stats and look good in the process. When you get to the NFL, a wide receiver being open is a completely different animal, right? Like, there's small windows you need to know when to throw to those guys. And Justin Fields is trying to acclimate to that. And I don't think Matt Nagy is always putting him in the best position possible.
You see it on Sundays. You see it on Sundays every once in a while where a guy is running wide open. You know, sometimes they schemed it.
Sure.
A guy slipped. Something happened.
Allen Robinson a couple weeks ago.
You'll see it 3-4 times during the highlight package. But most of the time what you'll see is 50-50 balls. They're being thrown up in the air. Give your guy a chance to go ahead and make a play.
Absolutely.
That happened with Tom Brady and his wide receivers.
Mm-hmm.
He threw him 50-50 balls. He threw him open. Why stick? One of our defensive backs is right there. Just can't do nothing
for
him.
Yep.
Yes.
Just
can't do nothing to him at that point. You know, threw the ball. That was a little bit of a longer pass where Jalen Johnson is all over him. But it doesn't make a difference because they found a way to make a play.
Yeah.
50-50 ball. Receiver saw it. Put his hands up in the air. He made a play. So you're going to get more of that in the NFL. And Justin Fields is going to have to learn how to throw it up there and pray to the heavens that his guys come down with it. Instead of that, Cole Kmet's dropping a pass on third down that would have resulted in a first down. Mooney is bouncing a ball up in the air that's going off his hands. Could the throw be a little bit better? Sure. But you're a wide receiver.
Yes.
You've got to be able to come down with that ball. I believe that one's catchable. I don't know if Tommy Waddle agrees or disagrees with me. I thought that one was catchable. It pops into the air. Could have been thrown a little better? Sure. Absolutely.
Rod is in Lockport, and he has an interesting question in regards to the head coach, Matt Nagy, and what he may be revealing if he is not available this week. Hey, Rod, you're on Carmen and Yurko. Meller in for Carmen. What's up, bud?
Hey, guys. Hey, Yurk, I just wanted to know your take. What happens if Nagy doesn't coach and all of a sudden Fields has the best game of his young career? Does that make conversations on Monday harder?
It makes them funner. It makes those conversations a lot funner. And it'll be interesting. And again, I'm assuming if he's not vaccinated, he won't be able to play the game because that's 10 days. He won't be able to coach
the game. So I believe he is vaccinated.
He's looking for two negative tests.
Two negative tests in a 24-hour period in order to clear the protocol and be able to coach on Sunday. If he is not available, the Bears have informed us that Chris Tabor will be the man in charge on the sidelines. Now, Bill Lazor will be calling plays. Sean Desai will be overseeing the defense. And then the special teams coordinator will take the lead role, at least in overseeing things.
Yeah, so it'll be – and why Tabor gets the job the way his special teams have been playing, sweet heavens. But that's fine. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make a difference who's in charge. All units will be able to go out. But if he does have the game of a lifetime against San Francisco, it'll be interesting conversations as you move forward.
Like, it's one of those things where – don't give them the opportunity to see just how replaceable you might be. That could be what we're looking at. If the Bears go, if they invite the 49ers in on Sunday and at Soldier Field, they look really good, you know, it's going to be awkward.
Yeah, the Wally Pipp of coaches. That's what this could be.
And a team that we know does not like to make coaching changes midseason may have to actually have a deep look inside.
How come we've never referenced the shortstop that played before Cal Ripken Jr.? How come we never do that? We still refer to Wally Pipp, the guy that played just before Iron Horse. Lou Gehrig got in there. You know, don't be Wally Pipp.
You know what? How about this?
Nobody knows who the shortstop was before Cal Ripken Jr.
That is.
And why is that not the reference as we move forward?
And you know what? I would submit to you that Wally Pipp is so overused, everybody knows who the hell Wally Pipp is.
Yes. It's the great bespectacled Len Sicada.
Len Sicada.
Lenny Sicada.
Wasn't
Wally Pipp a really good player?
I couldn't tell you that. How the
Len Sicada, we knew what Len Sicada was. But
why don't people say the Len Sicada?
I mean,
don't get Sicada.
They're saying that that Lou Gehrig was a nobody, like, or not a nobody, but they didn't expect him to be that good. Wally Pipp was...
Wally Pipp hit 12 home runs. His career high was 12 home runs in 1916.
Okay, but that back then, that was a lot, right?
Yeah, I guess it led the league. Good point. Touche, Merck. It led the league that year, so touche. You are correct about that.
Either way, it should be more modernized.
I agree with you. And once, how about this? Once Cal Ripken took the record over from Lou Gehrig?
Yes.
Yes. What was it, Len Sicada?
Len Sicada, yeah.
Len Sicada should have replaced Wally Pipp in the
exact same
moment.
Do we need to change the Mendoza line then? Mario Mendoza? I mean,
The Mendoza line was created for him.
Right?
200.
I thought it was 220.
It's 200.
It's 200.
Are you guys sure about that?
The Mendoza line. Yeah, that's going to be what it is. Len Sicada.
Look at Meller Googling
it
right now.
I'm younger than you folks, so I have to confirm.
I'm going to let you confirm, but back to
No. See, his career batting average was .215.
Right. So the line
Mario Mendoza.
So that's .215.
The actual Mendoza line is .215.
So there you go. And if you can hit above .215, you stay in the league,
or at least you used
that's
to be able
Mendoza
to.
That's the Mendoza line.
Now, as long as you can draw a walk, you can be Joey Gallo and hit .197.
Wikipedia: the Mendoza line is baseball jargon for a sub .200 batting average.
Oh, sure, but Wikipedia is never incorrect. I'm telling you, his career batting average is .215.
The Mendoza line is based jargon for a sub .200 batting average, the absolute minimum threshold for competence at the major league level.
Wikipedia again?
It derives from white hitting shortstop Mario Mendoza, who failed to reach .200 five times in 9 big league seasons.
All right. Back to Matt Nagy now that we've got this established. Yes.
So before you move so quickly.
Yeah.
Can we proclaim going forward we no longer use Wally Pipp on Carmen and Yurko. We say don't be Len Sicada.
Don't be Len Sicada.
There you go.
You got Wally Pipp, you got Len Sicada. That's what I'm going to say as we move forward.
And Carmen's going to come back and not know what the hell we're talking
about. Exactly, but we'll explain it to him. All right. Matt Nagy's career. Head coaching career with the Chicago Bears, starting to circle the drain.
It is. Agreed.
It is starting to circle the drain. You watch it, and he's starting to go, and he can't get out of the pool. That's where he's at.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to have to be miracles happening out of the quarterback position to salvage the reputation of Matt Nagy when it comes to being an offensive guru.
Yes.
Because that is gone.
I completely concur with everything you've just said there.
Yes.
I was thinking the other day, I don't think there's anything he can do. Like, anything realistic. Like, the Bears aren't going to go on a, you know, an eight-game run here where they reel off eight victories in a row.
No.
That's not going to happen.
That's not truthful. Though, Merkin's got him winning four of the next five.
But that is not completely outlandish. Now, what I don't necessarily think, I wouldn't be betting on that. But that's not as absurd as, you know, reeling off eight in a row. And the only thing that can save, I think the only thing that saves Matt Nagy at this point is the incompetence of the ownership.
Well, that's, yes, that's what got him here.
Exactly. And so that's the only thing.
That's
perhaps
what brought him here.
A futile, you know, seventh seed in this year's playoffs and the ownership up at Hallis Hall talks themselves into keeping him around for another year.
I think, like, Ryan Pace has got one of those stones that mesmerizes the McClaskeys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just kind of puts it around. And just whatever he wants gets done. That's it. He's got to have it. He's romancing the stone. I don't know what he's doing, but it's weird.
It's the best. It's a better explanation than anything else I've heard. I'm certainly not going to go off of his resume. All right. He's John Yurkovich.
I am.
I'm Jeff Meller, playing the role of Len Cicada today. This is ESPN 1000.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Miss something? The podcast is out there. The all-new ESPN Chicago app is here. Get it now. Get it in the App Store and Google Play.
Sorting through our dated references during the break. Apparently, Len Cicada was moved to second base when Cal Ripken arrived, so
it
doesn't work as smoothly.
I think we might have to go to Belangerd. You've just been Belangerd, Mark Belangerd.
So, who came after Mark Belangerd?
It could have been Cicada. I don't know. That's how long ago it was.
Well, see, I don't know who Mark Belangerd was.
He was a shortstop for the Baltimore Orioles.
Okay. You're saying that he was probably prior
he may have been
to
before
Cicada. Got it.
And again, not a Baltimore aficionado.
I'm guessing he was the Orioles shortstop of your youth.
Yes.
Okay. Because that's generally how it works. Yeah. Is once you get knee deep into baseball lineups when you're 12, they get etched in stone in your memory forever.
A John Lowenstein was an outfielder for the Baltimore Orioles, or an infielder, or a third baseman. I don't remember.
Sure.
I just know John Lowenstein.
For me, the center fielder of the Baltimore Orioles will always be Mike Devereaux.
Yeah.
So, you know, Brady Anderson and left. So, anyway, I digress. So, apparently, Len Cicada doesn't work as well as Wally Pipp. So, there you go. I'm glad
we got to the bottom of that. Yeah.
I'm sure the listeners are happy.
We're here for you guys. Yeah. We're here for you.
Let's try Eddie, who is on the north side. What's going on, Eddie?
Eddie! Hey, guys. Okay, so here's the first thing I heard was play calling. We switched that. The offense looks worse. Maybe Nagy's still calling it, but anyway. When you are a special quarterback, let's take Deshaun Watson. You score touchdowns. I don't care how bad your team is. You make it. You see it. And you make them touchdowns come even if you have the worst offensive line. He's out of there, and now they're screaming that the offensive line in Houston is worse than it was before. No, it's not. When you have a smart quarterback, he does it, and he makes it happen. And like Rodgers or Brady, you for yourself should see if this guy, the defense has got 12 guys on the field and call it up and not go out and blame somebody else because somebody else is telling you that. I always see Rodgers go up to the line and he's counting by himself. Bam, 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 bam. And then he hikes the ball. It's not there. And when you said about Ohio State, you're absolutely right. I watched the game at Ohio State this weekend. And you know what the announcers were saying? Oh, this guy's not going to be back next year. He's going to the pros. He better not be back. You know what I mean? It's just whoever you throw at Ohio State looks good. So is this next guy from Ohio State going to be a number one draft pick? Come in, and we're going to see the same thing over and over from Ohio State.
Here's what I'll say, Eddie, and Yurko can chime in as well. I don't think it's necessarily that you can't be a great quarterback if you go to Ohio State. The problem is it can be difficult. That's why it's one of the reasons why it's so difficult to assess a quarterback in college is because if you're playing at an elite program like an Ohio State, like a Clemson, like an Alabama.
Right. LSU at the time.
You have
elite skill players surrounding you. Your offensive line
You're getting five-star recruits on your offensive line.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're running back at Georgia, how do I judge you? Because usually you're getting the studs and offensive line at Georgia.
Yeah, so even though you have plenty of talent and you can probably play in the league, trying to differentiate, especially at that quarterback position, when you know, broken coverages left and right.
Right.
You know, the college defenses, it's so difficult.
You've got to be able to isolate individuals by themselves when you're trying to recruit them to play in the pros. When you're looking at them and trying to put a grade on them, you can't take the totality of the team. You've got to separate the individual, which is why you can find a Jerry Rice at Mississippi State.
Sure.
And then say, okay, he's not playing against that competition, but what makes Jerry Rice a first-round draft choice for the San Francisco 49ers? Something that he was doing with his individual skills that could be measured.
Mm-hmm.
They could measure it against other people.
Yes. Okay?
That's what's happening, what's going on there.
And having a, you know, and then hopefully the people doing the picking have a good scout's eye and know what they're assessing. Do you know who Bill Walsh wanted first in that draft, in the draft in which they selected Jerry Rice? They traded
which
up for
which was the 19-something draft. You got to give me the year of that draft, and I'd be able to maybe tell you exactly who I think they wanted.
You will know the name once I give it to you. Rice was drafted in 1985.
The 85 draft.
Mm-hmm.
And it was coming out, and who did they want? That was my freshman year.
Okay.
In college. Did they want Mark Zavagnin, the linebacker out of Notre Dame?
No, it's another wide receiver.
Oh,
Bill Walsh had eyes. He had designs on selecting a wide receiver.
Chris Carter.
It was not Chris Carter. I think Chris Carter was already in the league, okay, if I'm not mistaken.
Maybe.
Play for the Eagles at that point,
who was
I believe.
It? So we can
get... so we can move on. He actually wanted Al Toon.
Oh, Wisconsin, sure.
Al Toon, though, was selected 10th overall by the Jets. And so when he came off the board, the Niners selected Jerry Rice with the 16th overall pick. Anyway, I digress.
No, I like it, though. Al Toon.
Yeah.
He wanted Toon. Toon would have been very successful.
Absolutely.
Successful with the New York Jets.
The question, I mean, honestly.
Had a concussion. He's one of the first concussion guys that went out.
Think of how drastically, that's one of those sliding door moments where if Al Toon falls to the Niners, Al Toon's career, as good as it was, drastically different in the West Coast offense, which emphasized that short passing game in which Jerry Rice truly excelled.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying Jerry Rice would not have been great wherever he was.
Skinny slant. That's what they also developed, the skinny slant.
Absolutely.
Not the slant, you know, like the post running out of 45. They developed the skinny slant.
Yes.
Which was one hell of a pass route to go ahead and try to go, you know, defend because of that quick passing game.
Yes. And when you have a.
Because if you undercut it, they're going up the field.
Sure.
And that angle from where the quarterback to the receiver is different. And you don't realize as a defensive back in the corner that you've got to make up some ground to be able to undercut and make a play on them.
And when you have somebody under center with pinpoint accuracy like Joe Montana who can hit that short, easy pass for him, all of a sudden it revolutionized the way offenses were run across the league.
And the first tight end that played with that group?
It was before Brent Jones.
It was Ohio State kid. Yeah, John Frank.
Okay.
You remember that name?
Yeah, but I was a little young for John Frank. More
quit playing. I think it's John Frank. If that's not the first name, it's Frank. And he went to become a doctor.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Left after
5-6 years and said, I'm going to be a doctor. I got to get the hell out of here.
All right. Well, you know what? He's probably a shrewd move by him.
My life's work, yeah.
There you go. Let's try Matt, who's in Streamwood, has a question about the Bears this Sunday. Hey, Matt, what's going on?
Hey, Miller. Hey, Yurko, I have a question for you. Who made that head call that Chris Tabor from the special teams head coach? Was that Ryan Pace or was that Matt Nagy?
No, that's Matt Nagy.
Is he thinking because he's worried like a Lovie Smith type of situation in Tampa Bay where they have a coach in waiting if Bill Lazor or Sean Desai actually get the team to respond and they have a great outing? Is that what he's worried about? He's looking over his shoulder that he might get replaced?
That could be a possibility. I'd look at if Tabor had any head coaching anywhere else in his career, college, anywhere, something like that.
I'll check.
That's one thing that I would look for. Secondly, I'd look for, okay, who's got the most experience? And so that would be the second thing I'd guess. And then I'd just go with that's the guy that he trusts to be the head coach. That would be my third thing.
Yeah, it looks like he's always, for the most part, been an assistant head coach everywhere he's been. I don't see him ever having been a head coach anywhere. So I don't believe so. But
those would be my three areas right there that I would look for first to find out. That's why he did it, and then just the personal comfort with who he put in there.
There was a time when a day like today would be the event that is going to begin tonight, would be all we talked about for hours on end.
Yes.
We no longer live in that moment, but the World Series still does begin.
We'll talk about that with Jesse Rogers, who is in Houston. We'll talk with him in 2 minutes here on Carmen and Yurko.